Our Stories, Our Flats acknowledges the traditional owners of the Kulin Nations. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Welcome to Our Stories, Our Flats, a four-part podcast series about living and thriving in the Carlton Public Estates. Our Stories, Our Flats was created by and for the residents of the Carlton Flats. Written, produced and edited by Ayan Shoiwa. Narration by Raven. It is a free CR podcast. Special thanks to the City of Melbourne for helping us share it with the world. Today's episode is the final show in the series. It's where we explore solutions from public housing advocates. If you've been following us, you know that our community is brave, resilient, and resourceful. Carlton residents hold differing views on whether the buildings should be demolished or renovated. One thing is clear though, the community must be involved in the decision-making process, not as an afterthought, but every step of the way. We begin the final episode with Aku, the founder of 44 Flats United, a group made up of residents, former residents, and supporters of public housing. Aku grew up in the Carlton Flats, and at a tender young age, she was made to feel ashamed of living in the high-rise flats. In 2025, she's proud of her roots and now fights to protect public housing.
Hi everyone, my name is Aku. I grew up in the Carlton Flats and the Carlton Estate throughout the 90s and 2000s. Currently, I am involved in 44 Flats United. So I'm the founder and the leader of 44 Flats United, or 44FU. Our group was established so that we could have a space for residents and former residents to organise against the demolition plans for the 44 high-rises across Melbourne. Growing up in Carlton fundamentally has shaped who I am today, and I think it'll continue to shape me for the rest of my life. Born and raised on the Carlton Estate, as I mentioned earlier, from the very beginning, my mum really wanted my sister and I, despite living on the estate, to have access to everything that was available in community. She made the decision to send us to the primary school that wasn't on the estate, so that's Carlton North Primary School. That experience shaped me. Before I went to Carlton North Primary School, I was really proud of living in the flats. I thought it was the coolest thing that we lived high up, that we had these really cool views, that our building was visible from all over the city. And then when I went to school, I think that's the only time I realized that the flats is where the poor people live, that it's something that you should be ashamed of. I have a memory of going on a school excursion. I would have been to like the swimming pool, and our bus went past the flats. And I just remember this person, this girl in the back, let's go with the name Hannah, when I was like, oh, hey, everyone, look, it's my home. Hannah was like, oh, my God, Aku, I didn't know you lived in the flats. And I was just overwhelmed with shame and embarrassment. And every single bus trip from that day on, for the rest of my time, I ducked my head down every time we went past the flats out of fear that someone would be like, hey, everyone, that's where Aku lives. Like, it's so bizarre, but that memory has really, like, I really internalized that. Forty-four Flats United is a group of residents, former residents, and supporters of public housing. We established ourselves to ensure that not one person would be left worse off because of this decision to demolish the flats across Melbourne, and to make sure that we can protect and preserve public housing for current residents and future generations to come. And we also want to make sure that no land is leased or sold on unceded First Peoples land before treaty processes have been finalised. I was involved in a few different groups before I started 44FU. And what I realised pretty quickly is that the spaces that I was involved in, the groups I was involved in, I couldn't see my dad, one, finding out about them, and two, feeling comfortable or empowered working within them. And this isn't to discredit those groups. I think those groups play a particular role in this campaign, but I really wanted something to exist that would be accessible to my dad and people like my dad, for whom English is an additional language, and it didn't exist yet. So I was like, we've just got to start somewhere. So when we door knock, and this was very much intentional, I was like, I'm only going to door knock with others who are from the flats. And you would know this. We pick up on bullshit. You cannot say stuff to people that isn't true. Like, you will not get far. The doors will be shut on you. And we all know that because we're from the flats. And we're like, let's just give people information that they need. Most residents we spoke to, probably 95%, 99% did not know that this decision was being challenged in the courts and that there was also a parliamentary inquiry into this decision. So it works in Homes Victoria's favour to keep residents in the dark, and we know that. And the only information by and large that residents were getting was what Homes Victoria was giving them, which is next to nothing. One information sheet which says, you'll be relocated, it'll be better for you, we'll look after you, and that's it. And it doesn't give you the how of how it's done. And since then, this is like, we're 2 years in now, when residents put questions to Homes Victoria at information sessions, really basic stuff like what's our buildings being replaced with, they get no answers. I'll give you an example. I was at a session in May this year on the Richmond estate, and the head of the relocation or engagement team at Homes Victoria, who also worked for DFFH, when that question was put to her, what's being replaced, she was like, don't worry, when you move back into your public housing homes, it'll be just like it is now. And I had to stop her and say, did you just say that you're replacing them with public housing? And she said, well, we're not sure, but maybe some of it will be public housing. What we can go off, Ayan, is what's happened in the past. Flemington, I think 2017 was when the walk-ups there were demolished. We've spoken to residents who have been relocated from those walk-ups. When they were relocated back then, they were told that their buildings were just getting rebuilt, that they were old, they're getting built new homes for them that'll be good for them. They moved out willingly. And when they were told that it was time to move back, they were told that it wasn't actually public housing that they were building anymore. It was community housing, and the rent would be 30% of your income rather than 25%. Oh, and also, we've also built private affordable housing on the same land. That was 8 years ago now. But the only plans that the government's released for what will happen on these estates once these 44 flats are demolished show us that there's zero public housing. It is all affordable housing and community housing. So it's abundantly clear to us that the lack of transparency is intentional. I know this being from the flats myself and speaking to so many residents now. If residents were given all the information that they should be given to make an informed decision about this, there would be so much more resistance to this decision. And I think that the state government knows that and is fearful of that. And that's the role that we play and other community groups play working together. We have to shed light on what is going on.
That was Aku discussing the lack of transparency from Homes Victoria. There's a lot to admire about 44 Flats United. Their campaign is all-encompassing. It's not just about raising awareness. Residents are also provided with the necessary information to make informed decisions about their lives. Nothing about us without us. We'll share contact information for 44 Flats United on our 3CR page at freecr.org.au/ourstoriesourflats. You're listening to Our Stories, Our Flats, a 3CR podcast by and for the residents from the Carlton Public Flats. Next up is the trailblazing youth worker, Barry Barat. He sat down with us to explain what motivated him to take Homes Victoria to court. We conducted this interview before the Supreme Court handed down its judgment.
Hi, my name is Barry Berry, 30 years old, lived in North Melbourne since I was 6 years old. I like North Melbourne because it's, you know, closer to the city and it's got very good vibes there. Pretty much summer there for me growing up is pretty much like, you know, now, which is 30 degrees today, basically. You know, going to the pools with friends and families kind of thing, doing a barbecue, those kind of things. But pretty much just hanging out with friends and just can't wait for school to start as well, before the school starts. But also there's no air conditioner in the building, so everybody's out and about. People work back home until like 10 p.m. or 9 p.m. in the evening because of the hot weather. Kind of thing. And then also we'll have when we were young, we always played basketball or soccer during the evening because it was really hot. It was really cool in the evening. So for us, it was just easy to play around. So I've been a youth worker almost for 10 years now. I've worked in different areas, different organizations, such as CoHealth, The Huddle, YMCA. I've been there for 10 years there as customer service. So working with young people that live in public housing, I run my own community organization called Young Australian People. We do like employment and pathway, encourage young people to look for them for jobs and stuff like that, and personal development. Yeah, so I was at home watching TV and I heard that ex-premier Dan Andrews announced it on TV saying that North Melbourne and Fullerton are going to be in hard lockdown. And so what I did was I was shocked and surprised, and pretty much I called a few of my friends that from the community and told them, hey, did you guys hear about this kind of thing? And they're like, no, not really. And then straight away when the announcement came, there was about probably like 20 or 30 police blocked off the whole road of between Alfred Street and North Melbourne. None of the housing people didn't know what's going on, what's happening. So for me, it was just that to do. My mind just changed to community work, basically. And then straight away called all my neighbors, told them, hey, we're going to be on lockdown. And then me and one of my good friends, Mohammed, we went together to the shops, bought our essentials, came back, did our community work straight away, called everybody, called different departments, told them, hey, what's going on, what's happening. But during that 2 weeks, it was very crucial because we didn't know what's happening. And then slowly, they just decided to give us food that it wasn't actually essential for us. It was packaged pasta. It wasn't halal. It wasn't vegetables. It wasn't, you know, kind of thing. One of the big things that we did was we said to AMSA Mosque, you guys will be the essential center for us for food relief and everything like that, basically. But yeah, so during that time, a lot of people have lost their trust in government in terms of what they say and what they do, kind of thing. They're very aware now. Since then, they've just started to realize they have a voice. I like to challenge myself in doing things. But also at the same time, this is my community. This is my home. The reaction of the community was, great job, Barry. You know, did extremely well. My parents, they were like, you know, pleased that I was going, kind of thing. Because I have a disability, cerebral palsy. And so my parents were very, like, you know, worried of me growing up in terms of, like, how I'll be in the society kind of thing. For me, working as a youth worker, it just drives me to become in the community.
In April this year, the Supreme Court dismissed the class action brought by Barry Barra on behalf of public housing residents. The court ruled that the government did not have an obligation to consult with residents before making their decision. An Overland article by David Kelly, Libby Porter, and Priya Kunjan, written after the court's decision, is worth reading. We want to quote a passage from the article that sums up our feelings. The price of contesting landlord power, even through the narrow channel of legal remedy, is now being passed back to the tenant. In this system, even losing comes at a cost. I want to thank everyone who spoke with us for Our Stories, Our Flats. In making this podcast, we were nervous about how we might be perceived. We wanted to present our community in a good light, but that approach felt unfair and untrue. So we decided to encourage residents to tell it like it is. Our community is complex and nuanced, and we deserve to be heard. This is Raven Della Rogers Wright. Thank you for listening. Our Stories, Our Flats is written, produced, and edited by Ayan Shoiwa. Narration by Raven.